And some folks, they just don't want to. They don't want help, more stubborn than a mule, and then you're not going to pay rent. Well, you're going to get evicted, and we're going to get you out as quickly as we possibly can. So that's a life that's out, and a new person's going to come in that's going to appreciate the opportunity to have something better. It's like giving your kid a gift, and your kids, if you have kids, you know, sometimes they just don't want things. And so the gift is not received. No value has been created. And so the lives that are changed are the ones who receive the value.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our amazing guest for the day, Sam Sells. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Suja, for inviting me on your show. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, I'm really stoked to just hear all about everything you've been working on for the last several decades and what you're doing now with Wild Mountain Capital. So everyone, Sam is a retired U.S. Air Force officer and combat veteran, and he founded Wild Mountain Capital in 2018 with his hero dad. And Sam traveled globally with U.S. Air Force Special Operations as an international health specialist. And he saw poverty and a lack of safe housing while leading complex rehab and development projects worldwide. This motivated Sam to start Wild Mountain to transform neglected, unsafe, and mismanaged assets, not just into affordable housing, but into housing that is affordable. So really excited to hear all about your background and inspiration and how that's playing into what you're doing now. Sam, will you please just start us off by giving us a bit more color as to your background, you know, going around the world and working on these developments?
Absolutely. So started out in the early 2000s, flipping homes, and joined the Air Force at that time, became a firefighter and had all this spare time. So my buddies and I were just flipping homes left and right. And then I started flipping homes from 5 states away. And then when the military ended up being somewhere, you know, outside of the US and you're trying to, you know, keep up with everything going on, and it becomes a little bit of a challenge. But as time has progressed, it's gotten much, much easier. What I, you know, would love to share is that throughout my career, I moved, transitioned to becoming an officer and really got a master's degree in health policy, spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, working with medics all over the north of Afghanistan. And then I went into special operations and really focused on creating, helping, and developing healthcare systems over in numerous places around the globe. And then worked for some time with USAID doing the same thing, building facilities, ground up construction in West Africa looks a lot different than ground up construction in the US. Mm-hmm. You know, no one's there to say this needs to be 6.3 feet long or whatever, but I work with engineers and come up with the right designs and the plans and see what could be built. The biggest challenge, of course, was political, working those things through the president of the country or the minister of health or defense or the charge state affairs, you know, whoever we needed to work things through. Those were the challenges that I'd really work with and my team would work with. And ground up construction was probably more of the easy part. What I really learned, though, as you mentioned, is throughout my studies and throughout my work, is that people are really affected by where they live. They're affected by the people they're around. They're affected by the safety. They're concerned for safety. And that limits them with what kind of work they can do and they're able to do. And so when I got out, I was starting to see that I was going to retire from the military. I really wanted to build a real estate investment firm that inspires and leads accredited, unaccredited institutional partners into doing these investments and where they could, you know, create safe places for people to live, safe, clean, healthy places for people to live here in the US. mud huts aside, you know, the U.S. people are far richer, much, much healthier than they are overseas and at least in the places that I went to primarily. I could argue about Europe and so forth. But, you know, why can't we go and do these types of things, but do it within a capitalistic paradigm? Mm-hmm. Why can't we have a great impact and make money doing it? Mm-hmm. And so that's really what we've got focused on. We started in mobile home parks. We bought 10 mobile home parks probably the first year. They were doing things, really got after it. COVID slowed us down quite a bit. Lending became very tight.
Real quick, Sam, what was it about, your experiences internationally that led you to want to kind of be, I know you were flipping houses at some point, but to like kind of go back to that entrepreneurial part of yourself?
Yeah, so I knew, you know, I had expertise in two areas. One was global health. The other was development, construction, building up, you know, from the ground up or rehabilitating. Last job, military was leading numerous groups of people to redevelop a 500-bed facility from basically a warehouse into a functioning hospital. Huge project. What inspired me was to look and say, okay, to develop healthcare systems where I can really get in there and do it and lead it, it takes a massive amount of cash, and I don't have that. Mm-hmm. Typically, people graduate from the military and they're not cash rich, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Far and away. And so the second thing was, well, I need to build something where we can develop and grow a lot of cash so that someday I can go back to, you know, helping to develop or redevelop healthcare systems throughout the world.
Okay.
Can't get there with no money.
Yeah, totally. I think that's so cool and awesome. And, you know, we have to think about our lives. I mean, I'm in a kind of a similar boat where it's like, I have to think about, well, what is it that I really want to do? And, you know, well, I have to have deep pockets to be able to do what I really want to do. Right. So I got to get those deep pockets first, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. To me, it's not about retirement. We preach that quite a bit to investors. It's about freedom, right? Yeah. It's about freedom to go and do the things you want to do. And you can't get there if you're concerned about your daily needs. You just can't.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's the time freedom, which is, you know, something that I think is a lot of people's primary concern, you know, when they're first starting to think about getting into real estate or doing more investing. I mean, of course, there's also retirement, but then, you know, to do development, like you were saying, you need to have some level of deep pockets to be able to play in that space. I mean, of course you can always get investors and whatnot, but I'm just curious, since you mentioned it, how is your syndication business setting you up to do global health projects later on?
Great question. So we vertically integrated our system. So we run the property management system. We run the development company, so that we own the construction that's happening at the facility. We own their timelines. We own the cost as much as we can own or control the cost. Same for the property management. We control the cost. We can hire and fire whoever we need to keep the property running at tip top condition, that we can make sure governance is being employed correctly, honestly, with integrity, and we don't have to worry about people trying to game the system. Well, there's always people trying to game the system, but you know, we can control it as much as anyone can control it because it's within our wheelhouse. That soft background that we had, you know, it sticks within our company. So we take it from a very team approach, and we're flexible and so forth. That team approach also allows me to take a step back sometimes, and other people can run and do what they need to do because they're empowered to go do everything they need to do. And so what we're trying to do is build a machine, a network that just grows to the point where it's, you know, we can really continue to hire top talent. And at some point I'll take a step back and go start a nonprofit that is focused on global health. That'll be backed by a large amount of funds. Mm-hmm. That one project we did, when I wrote the budget was $1 billion mm-hmm. for that one project in West Africa. And then I'm going to go onto the ground and work that project, do the buildings and construction and so forth. So lots of cash.
Yeah. That project in West Africa. So was that, can you describe that? I mean, it sounds like there was a hospital involved.
Yeah. So that was, it was the kickoff of the Ebola response. I was working for USAID, their Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance, which is now changed names, but we were leading that response. And so we had to come up with a budget. And we can go down and talk about that story at a different time. But yeah. So I ended up writing this budget, submitting it to the Office of Manpower Budget, OMB, and then it went to the Senate House Ways and the House Ways and Ways, Ends, and Means Committee, and they approved that budget that little old Sam Sells, you know, put together on Excel spreadsheet, and you know, we worked it out. It was $1 billion, and then funds were moved over from OCO to ODACA funds. Needless to say. And then we were able to go employ those funds in West Africa. And I was able to go to be the lead ground officer out there, working the buildings, working the political networks with a team. And we could talk for a long time about how that went. Fantastic.
No, totally. Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you for just like kind of touching on that. It's very, very interesting to me, having studied global health as well when I was in college. So, okay, let's get into, you know, kind of what you're doing today with syndication and, you know, how you feel like that's helping create affordable housing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about affordable housing, you think of like big A affordable housing, that's your LIHTC stuff that we talked about previously before the show started, right? Low-income housing tax credits, you're going and working with the city or the state government throughout their respective housing authority to contract how many residents are going to be there, what they're going to pay, and so forth and so on. It's great because it's a single check that comes to you. There's a very negative connotation. And when we've talked about doing affordable housing, there's a lot of investors who are like, no way, get us out of there. We're out of there. Because the concern is governance. Mm-hmm. Governance is, are these people coming in with all of their baggage? You know, look, everyone has baggage. Some people hide it really well and others don't. It really comes down to the rules and what's allowed in at a property. Mm-hmm. If you allow things to happen in your property, well, those things happen in your property. If you allow the inmates to run the prison, then the inmates run the prison. And so we like to buy properties where the inmates are running the prison, and then we come in and we clean that place up and, you know, put the locks and keys back on the doors. And not that we're running a prison, but we're running a facility. We're running a community, and the community needs leadership, it needs governance, it needs empowerment, it needs caretaking, and so forth. And so that's how we look at it. And on our dashboard, we look at things that really matter to us. So how much are we spending on impact in that community? Well, all of our capital improvement dollars are going to improve that community. A community, 180, 250 units, that's a community. There's people bartering, there's buying and selling going on, there's friends, families, veterans, all kinds of things. Yep.
Real quick, Sam, are these like C or D properties that you're buying?
We buy C properties. You can say C minus a lot of times. We haven't bought in war zones per se, but we have showed up on the day of closing and SWAT team's been there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So would you say, how would you characterize, like, I mean, I know you've been talking about it a little bit, but can you just give us an idea of like kind of what the tenant base is like when you're going into these places? Are they, you know, hospitable to families or not? What does it look like?
Yeah. So two things. So when we go into the property, usually the tenant base is a little rough. There'll be people there who aren't paying, but are very rough, who get in fights in the property. And all kinds of other activities. We just closed on a property 3 weeks ago, and we were walking there the day that we closed and the day after. And every day that I was there walking around, and we were working on what we're going to do and where we're putting certain things and so forth, just kind of finalizing details, our plans before we had closed on the property. And we had so many people come up to us and say, thank you. You know, you guys must be the new owners. Thank you for buying this place. The last owner was terrible, never cared about us. We look forward to you doing, you know, cleaning this place up and so forth and so on. Because they can see we had already, you know, we already walked around the property managers that first day and said, trash is there, pick that up. That's not approved and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, and it just like, it's like a light switch happens. Everyone realizes, hey, you know, governor's in town. Old Simpsons episode where, you know, Homer sees Moses coming down the mountain. He says, oh, quick, you know, everyone look busy. Moses is coming. You know, it's they're like, oh, yeah. Everyone's, you know, shuttering around, except, you know, now rules are coming into effect and kids need to be safe. And moms, single moms need to feel safe sitting outside with their kids playing in the playground.
So yeah.
That's what's going to happen. And so that property is on that path to get there, just like our other property.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. One thing that, you know, I think a lot about, because I mean, we buy similar properties with a similar kind of situation that, you know, you just described. And, you know, along with that comes obviously a rental increase. I guess, how do you kind of put those pieces together for yourself? Like, okay, we are raising rents because we need to make it the whole project work. We're also improving the property, but at the same time, for people who are on like a fixed income, maybe it's becoming less affordable. But how do you work those questions out?
Easy. Not easy, but I'll make it sound easy. No margin, no mission. Mm-hmm. If we can't make money for our investors, we cannot do the project, period. Mm-hmm. We just can't. No margin, no mission. This is a profitable enterprise. We have to make money. And in the process, we're going to change a lot of lives. We even count how many lives we feel like we've changed. We've changed over 3,000 lives. Our goal is to change over 1 million lives. That's a lot of lives, but that's our goal. That's our target. So we keep track of that. We keep track of the number of communities we're working in. You know, we know we spent over $6 million on renovations. We know we've done over 600 units. We did 53 in the last 3 months at one property.
Yeah.
So we're getting after it, right?
Yeah. One thing that I just kind of on that note, like in terms of changing lives, is what I've just in my experience so far, and you know, every there's tons of different people out there and situations and stories, but what I've found is that a lot of tenants who they're so excited to live in a place that's nice and well taken care of, where the units are upgraded, like they're just so happy and they're willing, you know, they're willing to work for that and they're moving up in their lives. And so anyway, so I think that, and they're obviously so grateful, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely the truth. And I'm, you know, not very often, but I have, you know, received the criticism. You're raising rents on these people. It's like, we're creating a lot of value that people are willing to pay for.
Yeah.
And those renovated units, they get filled by people who are already living there most of the time, particularly in the beginning, people who ought to live in a nicer unit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know if you happen to see, and you do buy mobile home parks too, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you happen to see that this weekend, there was like a big New York Times article on mobile home parks.
out with family this weekend. Just trying to stay away from the computer. So yeah, interesting. I'll have to take that up.
Yeah, totally. No, I mean, anyways, I feel like unfortunately our industry sometimes, I mean, I'm on the same boat as you, like we do the same things with properties. But sometimes our industry gets like a bad rap, you know, and like the MHP, the article about mobile home parks was basically like, you know, people go in, they buy these parks and they increase the rents and people who are on fixed incomes can't stay and da, 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 da. It was just like not very good. It was not very good publicity for our industry, you know? So, but I'm curious, like at mobile home parks, like what is your experience with doing, buying those and renovating them and the tenants that are there?
Yeah. So, it's a different animal, different beast. And once you understand that beast, there's different strategies that people employ. So some people will come in and remove all the old homes and turn it into a very nice mobile home park. And you can have class A mobile home parks, so brand new units, very expensive, very, very nice mobile home community or manufactured home community. And then, you know, there's other folks who come in and their strategy, they keep the homes there and they renovate them and they charge for a newly renovated unit. The problem is you still have this unit. If it was built in the 60s, it still has, you know, or 70s, still has aluminum wire, and you have a risk of it burning down, or some hybrid of the two. So there are really, really good operators out there who are doing great things with mobile home parks. And just like the apartment industry, there's folks coming in there. And, you know, you said, you know, we're both in the business of changing lives and making a difference. Other folks are there just to make money, and that's not a terrible thing. It's just, that's what their point is. And so they're looking to make, to extract as much profit as they possibly can from a property. Mm-hmm. You know, we just think that you can do that and make a difference at the same time.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, you know, how would you differentiate people who are doing impact investing in our space versus people who are just extracting value as much as possible?
I would say a lot of folks that you see on the internet, they're looking, you know, internet, social media, they're extracting value, right? This is a value enterprise, and that's what they're there for. You know, maybe they have an analyst background and they're a ones and zeros type of person, and that's just fine. But, you know, impact investing is focused on, you know, other things. So that's why our metrics include lives, you know, changed, you know, and so forth and so on, because those things matter too. And so if you don't track it, if you don't measure, you don't make progress, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're not progressing in those areas, it's because you don't care about those areas. Mm-hmm. So yes, do we track NOI? Yes. Do we track growth in NOI? Absolutely. Do we track occupancy and occupancy growth? Absolutely. Rent growth? Absolutely. Right. But we also track the other things that really matter.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And just curious if you could help us understand like how you are tracking lives changed.
Yeah. So something happens when you've had the property for, at beginning, people get kind of upset because you're like, you guys actually do have to pay rent. Sorry. You can't live here for free. You know?
Yeah.
Right. People are going to get upset. And we've had plenty of folks who, you know, like, hey, you know, do you have a job? No, don't have a job. Okay. You know, have you tried for COVID assistance? Nope. Have you tried for rental assistance? Nope. Can we take you down to Women in Crisis or one of the relief societies out there? Can we work with a church, local church? Are you a member of a local church that we can go talk to on your behalf or with you? You know, need a job? We've gone down this long litany of items that we can do to help people pay rent. And some folks, they just don't want to. They don't want help. More stubborn than a mule, and then you're not going to pay rent. Well, you're going to get evicted, and we're going to get you out as quickly as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so that's a life that's out, and a new person's going to come in that's going to appreciate the opportunity to have something better.
Yeah,
it's like giving your kid a gift, and your kids, if you have kids, you know, sometimes they just don't want things. Mm-hmm. So the gift is not received. No value has been created. And so the lives that are changed are the ones who receive the value. Mm-hmm. And are willing to pay for it. And so we measure those who receive that value, who are willing to pay for it, and their lives are improved.
I really like that analogy, that how you create value for somebody. It's not just giving something for free, which isn't a sustainable way to go about running a business. Obviously, that's like, you know, completely impractical.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't create like vibrant communities, you know, but yeah.
So. It doesn't. It's not appreciated, you know, mm-hmm. Free gifts are not appreciated. They're not worked for. They're, you know. Largely, it's just not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And so do you have like your property management firm? Is that vertically integrated with, it sounds like it must be.
Yes, it is vertically integrated. We probably have, I don't know, 30 or 40 employees within that system. Three work here in our main office and the rest are on sites. We have 20 something properties. My goodness, we probably have more employees than that. And then the development company, we probably have 30 employees. Most of those are 1099 crews that are dedicated to us, who are constantly renovating units and doing other things around the clock at various properties.
Very cool. So then if I understood correctly, and please help clarify, is your property management staff like actually kind of functioning? I mean, you know, they're connecting people to resources. So are they actually doing, I mean, maybe not like exactly quote social work, but they're trying very hard to help people connect to services. Is that right?
Yes. It has a social impact. They are not social workers.
Yeah.
There's also a financial incentive, of course. NOI has got to be improved. Rent's got to go. People need to pay for their stuff. But there are plenty of groups out there who will help them, and they will teach them, you know, don't get mad because your toilet got clogged and then break the toilet.
Yeah.
Call the maintenance person so that they can come out and take care of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally, for sure. Well, that is just, I just found this conversation very, very interesting. And give us an idea of like what it is that you're kind of, what your arc is, where you are in with your syndication business and where you're looking to go.
Yeah, so we just kind of, we broke into or started working with institutional investment groups. So closed our first deal with an institutional investor. If you ever want to get ran through a very strict due diligence process, that is certainly pages and pages of questions about anything in our lives and, you know, all about us, our properties, our finances and everything else. But came out the other side and have a great relationship with them now. They're looking forward to doing a lot more deals.
Cool.
Which is wonderful. The downside is institutional groups typically won't let any other private investors into the deal. And so, look, I grew up American poor. I remember taking baths in horse trough in the middle of winter with the, you know, set up on bricks and a fire underneath it to keep it warm. And so I thought that was awesome when I was a little kid. But now looking back, it's like, man, we were really poor. So, you know, I really want to make sure that people have access to this opportunity. And we can't do that if we're only working with institutional partners. So we're looking at improving our syndication platform, working with other syndicators who are raisers of money. We're really good at operating, but, you know, working with other capital raisers or other people who want to do joint ventures. We've done quite a few joint ventures. We've done a number of syndications, smaller syndications, but, you know, now we're just in that 15 million plus range on the property sizes and, you know, 150 units or more. And it takes a little bit more capital to do that. We never built that machine. So we have to partner and we want to partner.
Sure. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's team sport, right? And
yeah,
there's a lot of different business lines and there's a reason why people say that about real estate all the time.
Yeah.
So very interesting. So, you know, you didn't really touch much on this, but I'm curious if you wouldn't mind just going into a little bit about your history, you know, as a kid and growing up, you know, as you said, in maybe as growing up poor and like how that influenced your life, you know, and choices along the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, totally different than where we grow up most of the time here. And I want to cage my words in understanding that I've been in places where people are really poor, incredibly poor. Your little block house is made out of mud. You know, the women aren't allowed outside. I mean, just crazy. You know, the crazy things to Americans typically think. That being said, growing up poor, had loving parents. My dad went back to college when he was in his 30s, got his degree at 39. We thought we were rich when he got a job making $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, holy moly, we had a new car. You know, you know, perspective was back then, you know, middle class was, you know, upper middle class were people that made 50,000 a year or 60,000 a year, and rich were people over 100 grand a year. That was like wealthy, you know, in our eyes. And since I've learned, or my perspective has changed quite a bit, but I will say, you know, growing up in that regards has made us, you know, really flexible. We're not afraid of these ugly, heavy value add properties mm-hmm. at all. We're not afraid to work directly with that social economic class. We're not afraid to sit and spend hours with someone who has never heard of syndication or real estate investing or anything and talk to them about, hey, you know, this is something you'll never learn in school. Let me tell you, you know, some resources and here's some books and things that you can go read so that you can one day change your life and your family's life, just like we did.
I think it's such a good point, you know, that you just started off with, which is that like what it means to be poor in this country is just, it's so relative compared to the rest of the world, you know, and we have to keep that in mind all the time because it's easy to forget, right?
Yeah. It's very easy to forget.
Yeah. It's still not easy. So congratulations on like, you know, kind of making a different kind of life for yourself. You know, I mean, that takes a special kind of person and work ethic and outlook on life and all these things. So when you're talking about individual investors versus working with institutional investors, I also work with individual investors and help them kind of understand, you know, what the power of this kind of investing. So I'm curious to just hear your take on how investing in syndications can help change investors' lives.
So if I would have understood what I know now, 20 years ago, I would have started investing with syndications a long time ago. And I probably never would have built the company that we did. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a ton of work.
You mean so Wild Mountain Capital is a ton of work?
Yeah. Wild Mountain Capital, the development company, the property management company. It's just a ton of work. I was visiting with some doctors yesterday and they were talking about buying a fourplex and operating it. And I said, you have a lot of extra time? And he's like, no, I have no time. And you want to operate a fourplex, which is like the worst thing you could buy right now. The returns are so tiny.
Yeah.
And one person leaves, you're down at 75% occupancy. You can't get a loan. And I mean, you're in trouble. He's like, well, we don't know about anything else. Like, well, let me tell you about syndications and how this can change your life, save so much on taxes, passive income. It's not really passive income, but passive to that investor. If I would have known about this that long ago, it would have changed our lives dramatically. Mm-hmm. We'd be in such a different place now than we would were, 20 years ago, flipping homes. And so what I would say to, an investor who's looking at buying a property, if you don't want to work a lot and you don't want to get woken up at night because the toilet broke, invest in a syndication. You're going to make a great return. Most syndicators offer good, healthy returns. They just do. if you want a very high return, you're going to need to go to somebody like you or myself who are doing these very heavy value add properties. They have better returns because they're a little bit more risky.
Yeah.
That's just how it works, right? If you're doing class A, you're going to get like this 15% return on your money. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they're just different kind of deals. Now, if you want to make an impact and you want to make great money, then invest with groups like us who are focused on the impact, mm-hmm. who trying to determine how they can improve their residents' lives. And guess what? If you're improving your residents' life, there's less turnover, there's less expenses, and your NOI improves. It just does.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, I think that's just a great note to end on and very wise words. I think when you're in this world of syndications, it's just hard to remember that not everybody thinks this way. And that's really our job, right? Is to help people change their mindset around it. But it's so obvious and apparent to me at this point that it's just hard to remember that people it's just such a different way of thinking about, wealth building and how to use your time effectively and what to do with your investing money, So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, awesome to meet with you today, Sam. Thank you so much. Will you please now share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and Wild Mountain Capital and anything else you want to share?
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Suja. And please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, Samuel Sells. Also, you can find me at sam@wildmountaincapital.com, all spelled out, wildmountaincapital.com. Always happy to help other people whenever I can. And please check out our website, www.wildmountaincapital.com. You can find out a little bit more about us. We are in the process of improving our website, always improving, always changing, always trying to get better at what we're doing. And most important, if nothing else, go out and try and have an impact for good in the world around you. Lift where you stand.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sam. And please, listeners, take some time to check out Sam and what he's up to and reach out to him. Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Yes. Thank you so much, CJ.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.